go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle.
I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the grapes check, too, okay? Because we'll get the punch on 3rd and short. Even 51 grapes. Even 51 grapes.
And the rest of the 2007 NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go. Welcome inside the playbook for week number 9 as the Pats and the Indy Colts get set to do battle in the game that we've all been waiting for this entire football season this far. I'm John Rook. We welcome you inside Patriots Playbook yet again. Our Wednesday program this week, we deal with, of course, a little email question of the day, which we'll get to in just a couple of moments. We will also have, let you hear in press conference and conference calls with Bill Belichick and Tom Brady in just a little bit. And yesterday, Jim Nance from CBS Sports joined us here inside the playbook and had a chance to, you know, basically just chat with you, Patriots fans, and anybody else who's listening along. But what we also wanted to do for you was bring you the total context of that conference call, because Phil Simms, who, of course, is Nance's broadcast partner and will be working the game in Indianapolis on Sunday with Jim, Phil Simms was a part of that, as was Bill Cowher. And in listening to some of the conference call thus far already myself, Coach Cowher obviously had some very poignant things to say about running up the score, which, of course, is a major topic of discussion not only here but in a lot of different areas of the country when it comes to discussing the New England Patriots at the present time. So we're also going to bring you that entire conference call with Jim Nance, Phil Simms, and Bill Cowher in the second hour of our program today. So that's what we have on the docket for you. Tomorrow's show, which on Thursdays we normally ask for your game predictions. So if you want to fire one off today, you can. But normally we get to that on Thursdays. And I got a specific question that I'd really like to get some feedback from you on today. So hold on to that thought for just a couple of moments. But tomorrow we'll get inside the Patriots locker room and let you hear from the players. They're out on the practice field today in full pads, beginning their actual game preparations for Sunday. The good news is that according to two sources now, one of them being Mike Reese from the Boston Globe, that Benjamin Watson is back out on the field today for the Patriots, which is that's outstanding news. He did not look to be limited to too much of an extent. Absolutely. So with Watson's ability to stretch the field from the inside, that just adds another tremendous weapon to the Patriots' arsenal. You know, the last couple of weeks that he's been out, they've been gone to more of the short routes over the middle with a guy, like Wes Welker. And Welker did take a pounding last week, kids. We talked about that last week. So having Watson back in the fold to help take some of that physical pressure off of Welker is huge. Absolutely huge. That is a big bonus for the Patriots. So that part is good. There were a couple of absences out on the field today during at least the media portion of the practice. Asante Samuel was nowhere to be found. So that may be cause for a little bit of concern. But we will get the updated injury report just around 4 o'clock Eastern time this afternoon. And if we don't get it for you here inside the playbook before we leave the program today, all you need to do at 4 p.m. Eastern time is just basically, again, reload your browser. Just refresh your browser here on Patriots.com, and they'll have it up for you. So it will appear magically, just like that. One of the things that I did want to talk about today has to do with the fact that, we have been looking forward to this matchup all year. I don't think a week has gone by. We've done 8 weeks now of shows, okay? 8 weeks of shows. We actually started after the first game. So this is the 8th week of the program that we've done this year so far. And obviously our, I think I said this earlier this season, 7th year of doing Patriots Playbook. So we've gotten into a lot of different things. And I don't think, though, that a week has gone by this season that we haven't at least mentioned this game, Colts-Patriots, at least once or twice. That's how prevalent it has been on everybody's mind. The PFW guys were just talking about that. You've been talking about it with your emails. You've been talking about it with your phone calls. You've been, you know, undoubtedly craving more information. And we'll do that. I'll probably do that. I've got to do, in fact, tonight. Here we go. Get the horn ready, Jason. I'll be doing the all-night show on ESPN Radio tonight from 2 until 6 Eastern time. So that, you know, for Jason Smith. So we'll be talking about that all. Yeah, there you go. See? So on the ESPN Radio affiliate nearest you, I'll be on that program tonight from 2 to 6. Yes, without sleep. That's correct. But we'll be talking about that. And it's because that's what everybody wants to talk about. I wanted to take a little bit of a different tact, however, with this matchup today from the aspect of historical perspective. It got me thinking over the course of the last day or two. Where do you think the Colts and the Patriots, where do you think they stand in terms of the overall history of rivalries in the NFL? You know, it seems like it's been so intense over the last few years that we've forgotten, and I know that I had to remind myself of this by just kind of looking through the record book, that these two teams used to be divisional rivals where they would play each other twice a year. And they played each other twice a year through what, 2001 was the last season they played each other twice a year. And then the NFL reformatted into the current divisional setup that we now have. And the Colts moved on to their division. The Patriots stayed in the AFC East. They played once in 03, twice in 04, twice in 05. And then, of course, twice last year, if you count the regular season game and, of course, the AFC Championship game. So it's not like they haven't faced each other twice a season. They just haven't done it as divisional rivals since the 2001 season. So I would ask you now that we have this 8-0 Patriots team against the 7-0 Colts. It's the first time, by the way, in the 88-year history. We touched on this briefly yesterday, and I wanted to point this out at least specifically today because I think this is rather significant. This is the first time in the 88-year history of the NFL that two undefeated teams with seven or more wins have faced each other. This comes from our friends at the Elias Sports Bureau. First time in 88 years of NFL history that two teams at least 7-0 have faced each other. I think that's remarkable. I think that underscores why Jim Nantz told us yesterday this game Sunday could be, in fact, one of the greatest regular season games ever played in the NFL. That's how big this game is. And yet, you know, I'll burst the bubble on this one. I mean, the game doesn't really mean anything in the overall pantheon of the season other than the winner is still undefeated. The winner still has a, I guess, quote-unquote chance of going undefeated and tying or surpassing the 72 Dolphins, and the winner gets a leg up in the home field advantage race within the AFC, and that's it. There's no championships to be won. I heard Rich Eisen on NFL Network earlier today say that this is really, they're billing this week as Super Bowl 41 and a half. Okay, you know what? I'll actually buy some of that hype because I think it's pretty clear that these two teams are the two best teams in the league thus far this season. Only five previous instances in which undefeated teams with five or more wins have faced each other. And, of course, we know that's already happened once this year when the 5-0 Patriots took on the then 5-0 Cowboys last month, or actually earlier this month. Today's 31st, Halloween. The Patriots, in fact, so it's happened six times overall. Six times in NFL history where teams at least 5-0 have met each other during the regular season. Both teams had to be undefeated. And the Patriots are involved in three of the previous six games. I think that's pretty cool. On top of all of that, where do you think the Colts and Patriots now ranks in terms of rivalries in the NFL? When you think of NFL rivalries, which teams do you think of? And where do you think the Patriots and Colts ranks? Where does this matchup rank in terms of overall rivalries in the NFL? Is it as good as Redskins-Cowboys in the 70s and 80s? Is it as good as, say, I don't know, it seems like the Giants and 49ers had a pretty good rivalry going there in the 80s to, what was it, early 1990? What about the Cowboys and 49ers in the 90s when both of those teams were battling for NFC supremacy, much like the Patriots and Colts are doing right now in the AFC? How about the old Steelers and Raiders rivalry? There's some really good rivalries in recent NFL history. And I'm curious to know where you think Patriots-Colts ranks. And does this rivalry get better, or does this rivalry tail off? Webradio at patriots.com is the email address. So there you go. That's how you get to us today. Webradio at patriots.com. You can also call the program if you like, 508-543-7482. Again, the area code 508-543-7482. And we'll be happy to take your phone call. So I'm trying to think in big picture terms, where Patriots Colts ranks. What makes this a rivalry? What makes this a rivalry in your mind? Is it because now, until the last couple of years, the Patriots had dominated this rivalry overall. Now the Colts have won the last three. Won the AFC Championship game 38-34. Won during the regular season in Foxborough 27-20 last year. Previous to that, in 2005, on almost to the day, November the 7th, 40-21, they pounded the Patriots here in Foxborough. They pounded them. So they've won the last three. And I guess you have to have both teams able to win a game at any given time in order to truly have a rivalry. And up until the last three times they played, I guess you had to question whether or not it was much of a rivalry. But now the Colts have proved every bit the equal, if not the superior team to the Patriots, based on the game that they played last, which of course counted most, and that was the AFC Championship game last January. Patriots blew a big lead, ended up losing the game 38-34. 21-3 was the deficit that the Colts overcame. I realize that probably is a sore spot with many Pats fans, but I think you have to give the Colts credit where credit's due in that particular instance. So overall then, since 2001, these two teams have played nine times. Patriots had won six. The Colts have won the last three. They've played three times in the playoffs. They were in the AFC Championship game together in 2003, which the Patriots won 24-14. They were in the 2004 AFC Divisional Playoff, which the Patriots won 20-3. And then, of course, last year's AFC Championship game, which Indy won by 38-34. But overall in this series, the Patriots have dominated 43 wins to 27. So this is the 71st meeting all time between the Patriots and Colts franchises. Patriots leading the overall series, but the Colts winning a significant game recently in the series. Where do you think it stacks up? How does it stack up in your mind? Where does it go against the best rivalries that you know of in the NFL? And can it sustain based on the personalities, the players, the coaches, the front office people? See, I would tell you that I think that this rivalry has some legs to it, and I'm glad that the NFL has a rivalry like this. I miss the days, the good old days of the Cowboys and Redskins back in the 70s and into the early 80s. I really miss those, simply because the coaches sort of personified that rivalry with Tom Landry and George Allen, and, of course, later Joe Gibbs. But those players honestly did not like each other. They, and I think there's a mutual respect here between the Pats and the Colts. But do you need dislike in order to have a true rivalry? Do you need the hatred? Sometimes I think you do, and then sometimes I don't think you necessarily do. In this particular case, I don't think you need that because the other team is every bit your equal. And this is a two-way street. It goes the same thing for the Colts as well here. The Cowboy-Redskin rivalry, in my estimation, was a little different because there was actual bitterness on the field. Now, the Raiders and the Steelers, when they were involved in the late 70s and into the 80s as well, or actually mostly in the 1970s, I think you had a similar situation to what you have right now between the Patriots and the Colts. You had two teams that were pretty good that would just kind of like exchange punches and go at each other. Physical play, yes. Hatred, I don't know. I mean, you know, it was easy to hate, you know, the Raiders. Everybody hated the Raiders because they, you know, they personified the old Al Davis. And they had some guys that, you know, were just, you know, blue-collar guys. Steelers, you know, had they had the show at the time with Bradshaw and Stallworth and, you know, and DeFranco Harris. And they had the Showtime guys, at least of that era. So a little different. But I definitely think the Colts and Patriots at present time deserves to be mentioned in the same breath with some of these rivalries. I don't know if it ranks number one. I don't know if it ranks number five. I don't know if it ranks number 10. But I would tell you that now that both teams are capable of winning this game, that this in and of itself personifies what a rivalry in the professional ranks, especially within the NFL, should be. I am constantly amazed, however, though, how roles reverse. I mean, back in 2003, 2004, it was the other way around. It was the, you know, the Colts were the unproven entity or unproven quantity, and Bill Polian is, you know, banging his fist on the desk in the press box, and last year or whenever it was, two years ago, he's pounding on the desk and just praying that one of his players, you know, breaks Doug Flutie's legs. I mean, we all heard it. Anybody who was in the press box heard that. And how, you know, a few years ago the Patriots were personified as the good guys, and now the Colts are being thought of as the good guys, and the Patriots are thought as the bad guys. Because they what? Because they beat up on people? Because they, you know, went through Spygate? What? I don't, you know. It's just amazing how things turn and can turn at almost literally a moment's notice in terms of perception. I think that's truly remarkable. Just kind of shows you that, you know, all you really have to do is plant a seed and then just keep feeding it. Just keep feeding it, and it's going to grow. So, anyway, we've got that for you today. So I'd like your thoughts on whether or not you think the Patriots and Colts is a rivalry that ranks up there now with some of the best rivalries in the NFL, based on some of the facts that I've already given you here today. So you can send us the email, webradio@patriots.com, 508-543-7482. That's the telephone number. If you've got some other thoughts that you'd like to pass along, or if you have some questions, comments, criticisms, concerns, you can do so via email. If you want to talk a little bit more about the topic of running up the score, which has been prevalent throughout the week and will continue to be prevalent throughout the week, and you haven't had a chance to get your 2 cents worth in on that, there is still time for you to do that as well, and we will take your email and we'll talk about that. In particular, I get this from Lou in Maryland. Sent this in toward the tail end of PFW, and he says, has anyone addressed to Mike Ditka the fact that the 1985 Bears ran up the score on the Pats in the Super Bowl when it was obvious that they were winning? Even the fridge made a touchdown. Of course, we all remember that. That's a legitimate question, Lou. It's a legitimate question. It's not running up the score unless, to me, there's taunting involved, number one. That's the only way that you really know that it's blatant. After you score in an instance where it could be conceived as running up the score, if a guy slams one in your face or dances a little jig or whatever in front of you, I could see that being running up the score. It's not running up the score if the defense can't stop you. That day the Patriots couldn't stop anybody, and I think we all realize that. So I don't know necessarily that it was running up the score. Maybe a little bit, but I mean... William Perry was a part of that offense in blocking situations for Walter Payton. So to say that, you know, they gave him the ball on purpose just to run up the score, I don't know that you'd ever get Mike Ditka to really admit to that. But that's, you know, it's an interesting point, nevertheless. Brian in Saugus, Massachusetts, says, Sunday was game four of the World Series. I left the game to catch the baseball game. I think most people left early to watch the game. I can't wait for the game this weekend. I think it's crazy that the Pats are 4.5-point favorites in Indy. Actually, the last spread I saw was 5. So apparently the money is still coming in on the Patriots, kids, which I think is crazy. I'm sure the Colts are loving this. I heard an interview done earlier today on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic and Mike Greenberg interviewed Dwight Freeney of the Indianapolis Colts. I don't know if any of you managed to hear that this morning or not, but obviously I listened with great interest. And first of all, having known a little bit about Dwight Freeney from his days at Syracuse, good guy, personable guy, humble guy, great football player. He's one of those edge rushers that, you know, in the past the Patriots have had real problems with. You know, you can list Jason Taylor and Aaron Schobel and certainly Dwight Freeney, all in the same type of classification in terms of edge rusher, which has given the Patriots offensive line trouble in the past. Well, Freeney was most complimentary of the Patriots, as you might expect him to be. He also went on to say that, you know, the fact that the Patriots are a favorite over the Colts, when the Colts are the defending champs, they're undefeated just like the Pats. Arguably, they're better than they were a year ago. Certainly, they're better at this time of year as compared to this time a year ago. And that they're a five-point underdog at home. And he said, it doesn't bother me in the least. He said, I completely understand why the thought process is for the Patriots what it is. The way that they're steamrolling people, the way they're rolling over people, the way, he said, we've already looked at the videotape. He said, that is going to be a real challenge for us. First of all, to be able to get to Tom Brady in time because the offensive line is playing well enough. Second of all, to be able to guard all of their receivers. It's just, it's going to be difficult. He said, you know, they're going to get some on us. We hope to get some on them. We expect an absolute knockdown dragout. And I'm basically paraphrasing what he had to say in the interview. But the thing that struck me was it didn't bother him that the Patriots were a favorite in Indianapolis. Didn't bother him. I happen to think that that's not quite the case with everyone in that locker room. Tony Dungy is not the rah-rah kind of guy that a lot of coaches are. He's not even really the kind of coach I think that Bill Belichick is. But Tony Dungy is the kind of guy I think that, you know, what he doesn't say carries real weight. And I think that, above anything else, will cause Indianapolis to be self-motivated for Sunday's game. Without a doubt. That's kind of how I look at it. Brian Ansaga says, he says Pats 38, Colts 24, so he's already fired off his score prediction, which, of course, you can, but we'll get to most of those for you tomorrow. But it's a five-point favorite right now. So the early money started out at 4.5, and it's now at 5. So the early money, last I looked, early money going on the Patriots. People think New England's going to win this football game. And, you know, you heard the PFW guys say that, you know, at least a couple of them think it could be anywhere from 10 to 14 points. Now, I don't know if you think this is Homer radio or not, but, you know, if you're a Colts fan and you think that the Colts can actually slow down, you know, the Patriots offense, first of all, I'd like to know if you're a Colts fan, have you seen the Patriots play? I would also point out, second of all, that the Patriots, well, the defense the Patriots faced last week, Washington, was ranked 4th overall in the NFL going in terms of total yards and points allowed and everything, 4th. And they hung half a hundred on them. The Colts defense, I believe, and obviously the Colts defense is as good as it has been in a long time. Statistically speaking, Colts defense, I believe this week ranks 4th. In total defense of the NFL. I just glanced at the numbers this morning, but I believe that's where they fell. So it's pretty good defense, yes. Statistically, it's not any better than what Washington was going into last week. And the Patriots put 52, hung 52 on the Redskins. So, and I'll tell you, looking at the Colts' defensive numbers, there's one thing in particular that does concern me from an Indianapolis perspective. And the fact is that the Colts defense allows opponents to complete 46% of their third down chances. 46%! Now, that's not a good number if you look at it from a defensive side of the football. Not a good number at all. I'm sure the Colts will be the first to tell you that. So with the Patriots, the offense that they have and the Colts having a penchant for giving up on third down, you know, I wouldn't be at all surprised to see the Patriots do something along the lines of a controlled attack, whether that's with a controlled passing game, mix in a little run, keep the ball away, play a little keep away from Peyton Manning and the Colts. Try to grind out some 10, 11, 12 play drives that can take up anywhere from 4 to 6 or 7 minutes on the clock and cash it in. Somehow I don't think it's going to quite work out that way because I'm sure that the Colts defense will stiffen on occasion. But, you know, don't be surprised if you see a little of that. I think you might see that from both teams. You might see both teams try to play a little keep away. I mean, obviously it didn't work for Washington. didn't work well for Washington anyway, even though they said going into the game that that was one of the things last week that they wanted to do, was try to keep the ball out of the hands of Tom Brady and the Patriots offense. That's the big thing. So you might see both teams trying to play keep away, which is why it could end up becoming a situation where the last team that has the ball wins on Sunday. Certainly adding up to be a rather special game, is it not? Yeah, I think so. I thought you might agree with that. Let me get one more in here, and then we're going to get you off to Patriots coach Bill Belichick and get his thoughts on preparations as he spoke to members of the media just before practice began this afternoon. This one comes from Dan in Atlanta. Says he's an ex-Patriots fan and an Atlanta Falcons season ticket holder. Yipes. Dan says, what happened to Jennifer from Chicago? I haven't heard her comments in a long time. Okay. I can't answer that question for you, so you'll have to ask the PFW guys, Dan. Gary from Syracuse says, can you finally clear something up for me? I thought I heard someone say that it is not illegal to tape opposing coaches as long as they do it from their booth. Is this true? If this is true, what isn't what Bill Belichick did more of an infraction than cheating? And if this is also true, aren't other coaches doing this? Are they all just hypocrites? And if Mangenius was a part of Bill Belichick's coaching staff, he must have been a part of the cheating. Also, why are we giving him a free pass? I don't know. Nobody's giving him a free pass. First of all, Gary, nobody's giving him a free pass. We've definitely called him out on it. I believe that it is illegal to tape any opposing coach and get their signals. It may very well be that other teams have actually done it from their booths, and the Patriots were just blatant about it because they did it from the sideline. But as far as I'm concerned, as far as I know, and from what I've read, it is illegal, period, to tape opposing coaches. That's my impression. So, anyway, I hope that someone answers your question. And I'm sure if it doesn't, then someone else will email in and include that bit of information for us. Webradio at patriots.com, 508-543-7482. I'm John Rook inside the playbook. Let's get you off now to Patriots head coach Bill Belichick from earlier today.
Morning, everybody. Nice turnout today. Watching a lot of the Colts the last couple days, of course, and, they do so many things well. But I would say the most impressive thing that I've seen is that defensively, they just don't give up any big plays, really. They don't give them any long runs. They don't give them any long passes. They don't have many defensive penalties. And the same thing's true on the offensive side of the ball. They don't have any sacks. They don't give up any, don't have any turnovers. They don't fumble. They don't have very many penalties. And they don't have very many negative runs. You know, they're right at the top of the league in all those categories. So they make you earn everything. And it's hard to get. I think, all the exemplary statistics that they have speak for themselves, starting with wins and all their rankings and all their production and everything. It's very, very impressive what they've done, but they really take care of the ball well. They don't have any bad plays really on offense, and they don't have any on defense. And that's, for the amount of football that they've played and the level they played it at, I think that's, that's pretty impressive. So. It's a big week for us, a lot to get ready for, a lot of work to do, and, we'll get started on it today, but we'll certainly need all the preparation time we can get for the Colts. They just do an outstanding job all the way around, every phase of the game, every aspect of it. They're tough, and they're playing extremely well right now. So it'll be a big challenge for us to go out there and try to be competitive. I wouldn't say so. I think they don't do anything different fundamentally. I think they do what gives them the most production, and they can run the ball, they can play action, they can throw deep, they can throw short, they throw to the tight ends, they throw to the receivers, they throw to the backs, they run inside, they run outside. Wherever you are, they're probably going somewhere else. Wherever you aren't, that's where they're going to be. So. Everybody's that plays them, of course, is concerned about Wayne and Harrison. That creates space inside. Once you start coming inside for the running game and Clark and UTEC and those guys or try to pressure Peyton, then you got problems outside. So you pretty much got problems everywhere. And it's just a question of where they think you're most vulnerable, and that's usually where they hit. And they hit hard.
You notice that constantly defenses going sub against them, staying with their base?
They've seen the whole spectrum. Depends on what they're in. They use some different personnel groups. They use a lot of two tight ends and one back. But they do use some three receivers with Gonzalez. They've been banged up a little bit at receiver. Harrison's missed a little bit of time, so that might have limited a little bit of the three receiver offense. But it's clear they can play pretty much in any grouping. They've made big plays in short yardage when they're in their two tight ends and two back groupings. They make, they move the ball, make plays and everything. Doesn't matter, run, pass, play action, inside, outside, short, deep, catch and run, over the top. You know, we can put a highlight tape up here and find plays in all those areas. They're good at everything.
Bill, their defense is very good overall, obviously, but how important is Bob Sanders to their defense?
Oh, he's important. But again, they play good team defense. They're very fast. They're athletic up front. They get a lot of penetration in the running game. They can rush the passer. They're fast, like we talked about Washington being fast, but I think they're faster up front, with Mathis and Brock and, of course, Freeney. So they create a lot of – they get on the edges a lot in the pass rush and in the running game. A lot of times the linemen can't really get in front of them, get them covered up, and they penetrate up the field, and then usually something bad happens after that. The quarterback gets pressured. Runner has to cut back into the pursuit. So they do a good job. Sanders is, he's outstanding. Great range, terrific tackler, motor. Hard-hitting guy, causes a lot of fumbles and turnovers. Gets in a lot of plays. If the other guys don't get there first, which a lot of times they do. So they're good. They're good all the way around. A lot of team speed. Sanders has quite a bit of it. When they go to their sub defense, then Jennings would come in and Marlon Jackson would go into the play, the nickel corner.
But Jennings goes outside and Jackson goes into the slot.
That's generally the way they do it. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Bill, how are the personnel changes on both teams since you last faced them alter this game from last year?
I guess we'll be talking about that on Sunday. But, they don't have a lot of change. Offensively, the two main people that are new are Hugo and Gonzalez. And defensively, they've got a couple changes at linebackers, the corners. But fundamentally, they play the same. It's, when you watch last year's tapes and cut-ups with this year's plays, it's hard to tell, this is this year, this is last year. I mean, if you really look and say, okay, there's Terry Glenn, okay, there's Hugo. But, you watch the plays, you watch the execution, you don't see Jew in there, you see Hagler in there. It's hard to tell. It really is. It's hard to tell. The corners, Hayden, Jackson. Jackson played last year, but not as much, played more in the slot. But you just, they look, it's hard to tell. It is really hard to tell.
Bill, Phil Simms said yesterday that some of your coaching style is based on fear, players needing to understand that the job can always be at stake. Would you agree with that assessment of your style?
I think, whatever Phil says, you can ask him about that. I don't know. We're just trying to win games, that's all. Just trying to coach a team and help the – hope I can help the team and play better. And hope we can win some games. That's all I'm trying to do. So let him and all the other experts talk about style points. I don't know.
Bill, how impressed are you with what your team has done at this point?
I'm not too worried about what happened in the past. I'm looking forward to the Indianapolis game. That's what we're focused on. So all our attention's on Indianapolis, not what happened in the past or some other game or week down the road.
Bill, you have an appreciation for the history of the NFL. This is the latest two undefeated teams have played since, I think, the 20s. Do you take anything? I know you're just following the game.
I'm glad we're one of them. Say that. I'm glad we're one of them. But, again, I don't think last week or 2 weeks ago has a lot to do with this game. It'll come down to you know, the preparation that the two teams have and how the two teams perform on Sunday. You know, we've had some great games with Indianapolis through the years. They're an outstanding organization from top to bottom, great football team. And you know, they've clearly gotten the better of us the last few times. And, so I hope we can be more competitive with them than we've been in the past. Do the same thing every year. Just try to take a look at our options and improve the team. Do the same thing since you know, since 2000.
When you look at their run defense last year, they obviously had a lot of problems stopping.
Not in the playoffs, they didn't.
Right. What has been the change there?
They play good. I mean, they play good. It's just, you know. It's team defense. It's not one guy. You know, one guy can't stop the running game. One guy can't stop anything. You know, you need 11 guys out there, and they play good team defense. They cause a lot of negative plays. They don't give up very many big plays. They get you in long yardage. They don't commit a lot of penalties. They hustle. They tackle well. They do a good job, and they've been doing a good job. So,
Bill, is your personal preparation this game any more intense, any more consuming than any other game, or are all games consuming for you?
I try to prepare hard for last week's game, the week before that. So, you know, you always try to do the best you can. There's always room for improvement. I'm not saying that. And I make a lot of mistakes every week, and you try to correct those the following week and get it better. So, you know, there's things that I would look back on in previous weeks and do differently and try to improve those, but you know, just try to put everything we have into this game and hope that I can do something to help our team play better than we played out there the last time, because that wasn't good enough.
Obviously, Dallas Clark is a tight end by trade, but they line up in the slot a lot. Personnel group, do you treat that as a third receiver when he's out there? Do you treat it as a tight end?
Well, you know, they move him around. It's hard to... You don't know exactly where he's going to be. A lot of times he is flexed out. There's no doubt about that. He's kind of like a slot receiver, but he does line up in tight. And sometimes he lines up on the backside of a formation, a 3-by-1 formation, where they put put Harrison Wayne on one side and split him out on the backside. So they give you some different looks on that. He's a very versatile player. You know, he's smart. He's fast. Catches the ball very well. Runs good routes. So he can, you know, he's a good receiver out. As a split guy, he's good coming off the line of scrimmage in the normal tight end position. You know, he's an effective blocker for him in the running game. Again, they do a great job of creating mismatches and taking advantage of them. And most of the time when they throw to him, he's open. You know, part of that's the recognition by Peyton. Part of it's him doing a good job of running routes and beating the coverage, or a combination of both. So he's a tough guy to match up on, you know, like a lot of the tight ends we've seen this year. You know, he's faster than most linebackers he plays. He's bigger than most defensive backs he plays. Plus, he's a good receiver. You know, no matter who you have on him, they'd have trouble covering him. So it's, you know, he's a hard guy to match up on. And he's, you know, can block in a running game. So it's a tough matchup.
Usually when you go to a dome, you don't have to worry about elements. Last year's title game, I remember it was very hot in there. I think some players even mentioned they cramped up because of that.
Yeah, well, I don't think it'll be any hotter than it was in Miami 2 weeks ago. So, but yeah, we gotta, whatever the conditions are, we gotta play in them just like they do. You know, I don't think it favors either team. You just gotta deal with it. But it can't be any warmer than it was in Miami though.
Did that surprise you last year, and do you have to factor that into your
No, preparation? I think that's the way it is at most domes. Get a full crowd in there, and you know, it's a lot of body heat.
Are these Colts better than a year ago?
113 in a row. Pretty good.
You think these two teams are pretty even?
Find out on Sunday.
Thoughts on Hugo, left tackle?
Well, you know, he missed last week, but and half of the little bit of the previous game. Been a real athletic guy, quick feet, long arms, you know, big frame, kind of, you know, similar to Ferguson, you know, real athletic. I think he's got plenty of talent out there. I mean, Terry Glenn was, you know, one of the best tackles in the league, no doubt about it. He was a big, you know, much bulkier guy. You know, Hugo's kind of a leaner frame, you know, but very athletic, long arms. You know, he's a good player.
Any time to trick or treat tonight, though?
That'd be a game day time decision.
Joe, can you just comment on the two quarterbacks? I know it's probably two of the best they'd be able to play the game.
Yeah, pretty good. Yeah, I think they're both at the top of their game. Great players, great leaders, smart guys. Make a lot of plays. Know how to manage a game. Won a lot of games.
Final question. What makes this rivalry special?
Well, I haven't been that special the last three times we played them. So. Okay, thank you.
All right, so there you go. Patriots head coach Bill Belichick with members of the media from Gillette Stadium earlier today. And by the way, it was a rather extra large crowd. Who were in attendance today. We had 14, 15 different television outlets, local stations, as well as networks covering newspaper reporters from, I think, USA Today and even New York were also involved. So obviously this being the game of the week, maybe even the game of the season in the NFL, is catching a lot of attention, not just in Indianapolis and in New England, and rightfully so, I would imagine. Webradio@patriots.com, that is our email address, webradio@patriots.com, and the telephone number is 508-543-7482. Our topic of the day has to do with rivalries and where you think Patriots-Colts stacks up. Is it a rivalry in your estimation, number one? How does it stack up, if so? How does it stack up with some of the great rivalries in the history of the NFL? Does it rank up there in the top three, four, or five? Is it as good as, say, Cowboys-Redskins back in the 1970s and early 80s was? Do you go back that far? Or maybe you're not that far back a fan of the NFL, and maybe this game is a rivalry, and maybe you think it is the best rivalry that you personally have ever been a part of. And if that's the case, I want to hear from you today. Webradio@patriots.com. That's how you email us. Fire off a quick little note and let me know what you think. This one comes from Craig in Pennsylvania, who says, I do think that the Colts will score on the Patriots defense, but I do not think they are going to score at will. Peyton is good in the pocket, but I'm sure Bill will find a way to bring pressure up the middle. I think the Pats win 42-28. The key to Indy's defense as of late has been the play of Sanders. He's similar to the Patriots' Steelers' Palomalu, but I feel a bit better. The first time Brady faced Palomalu in Pittsburgh a few years back, Troy was all over the field, stuffing the run, forcing the team into the third and long. Needless to say, they put a thrashing on the Pats that day. Later in the playoffs, however, Brady used Palomalu's aggressiveness against him, sucking him up on play fakes, going deep over the top of him. I know Pittsburgh doesn't run the Tampa 2, but I think Sanders' aggressiveness will be used against him. Suffice it to say here, Craig, that if the Patriots see Sanders back in coverage, they're going to run. If they see him cheating into the box, they're going to throw. Pretty simple. Says, being a Pats fan, I really want to puff out my chest and boast that Brady has always been better than Peyton, and he finally has the receivers to prove it. We have seen receivers leave the Patriots for big money, and they're not really put up the numbers they were expected of them. Patton, Gibbons, Branch. I feel Brady made those receivers look better than they actually were. Now to the question. Do you believe Peyton has had the luxury of great receivers all the time, or would these guys actually be just average receivers on other teams, as we've seen the former Pats become? No, I think if your question is about the Colts receivers, Craig, I think he's had great receivers from the get-go. I don't think there's any way that you can say Marvin Harrison and Reggie Wayne are not great receivers. They are. Dallas Clark is becoming a preeminent tight end, you know, in the NFL. Certainly, Peyton's ability to get them the ball where they want it, when they want it, is a huge reason behind them being the talented receivers that they are. But it goes hand in hand. Those guys' ability to get open so Peyton can hit them is also a huge reason behind it. I don't know that those guys would necessarily be plain receivers, plain vanilla receivers, if they were on another team other than the Colts. I think certainly it just depends on the quarterback. I think they'd be a little bit better receiver if they were with New England. But let's say if they were a receiver on the New York Jets or the Miami Dolphins right now, I don't think they would be quite the same receiver. They'd still be good. I think they'd still make the other team a little bit better. But I don't. They certainly wouldn't have the impact that they're having on their current teams. So anyway, you know, the fact that Brady has these top-notch receivers now, I think we're all seeing what, you know, a lot of us who have followed the game for a long, long, long time have realized for the last several years, that both of these quarterbacks are good. Both of these quarterbacks have similarities. Both of these quarterbacks have differences, but they're both really good. And I have long maintained that if you put Manning in New England and you put Brady in Indy, not much would change. In fact, I'd wager a guess to say nothing would change between either side. The end result is that they'd still win the football game with either one of those guys quarterbacking. So I think that's, you know, the best analogy I can use to the overall value and ability of both of these guys. I think arguing the semantics over which quarterback is actually better is flat out ridiculous.
Everyone sucks but me.
Yeah, well, I think it's pointless because they're both good. Trying to say that Brady is, you know, a little bit better than Manning is pointless. It's a pointless conversation to have. Let's see. This one comes from Angus, who says, just a key state in this game I thought worth mentioning. Colts have the number one pass defense. I can't see Tom Brady having a clean game. If there is any game this season Brady has multiple picks, it's this one. I'm quite concerned that our running game is not good enough to at least help counteract the Colts' pass coverage. If there is any point in this game where the Patriots must secure a large lead, it's the first quarter. Colts seem to be extremely slow at the beginning of every game. Well, let me kind of attack that for a second, Angus. First of all, yes, the Colts have the number one pass defense. Up until this point in time, though, which is really kind of this year, the Colts had a good statistical pass defense because teams ran the ball on them, so they didn't pass as much. This year, it's a little bit different. This year, you'd have to say that with Sanders in there and relatively healthy, that certainly he makes a world of difference for this team overall defensively. Now, they're holding opponents to 165 yards per game, which I think is right at number one, number two in the league, statistically speaking. I do believe, however, that the Patriots' running game is good enough to counteract any pass coverage. Because when you include the running game in it, you also have to include the dump out to the running backs. And Kevin Faulk is one of the best there is at that. We also saw Lawrence Maroney get involved with that a little bit last week. So saying the Patriots' running game isn't good enough to counteract the Colts' pass coverage, I don't think is quite an accurate statement. I can understand maybe why you might think that, because statistically the numbers don't seem to be there, but I think it's largely because the Patriots' passing offense has just been wowing everybody, and the running game pales by comparison. I would agree with you, however, Angus, that yes, I think that the Patriots should do everything they can to put pedal to metal early in the game. Yes, the Colts are somewhat slow getting out of the gate, at least by my impression. They've outscored opponents 37-27 this year in the first quarter. It's not terrible, but it's not great. What are the Patriots? 75-7, I believe it is, in the first quarter. The Colts generally turn it on in the third quarter. That's been their best quarter of the year when they've outscored opponents 70-21. So, yeah, first quarter start, big start for the Pats. Very important to the overall success of this game. Get that crowd out of the game as quickly as you can. I think that you'll probably be in good shape, and you'll have the Colts playing from behind. And if you have the Colts playing from behind in this game, then you're going to make them more one-dimensional. And I think that's really what you want to do, because that way the defense will be able to know, for the most part, what's coming at them. Brian writes a note. He says, I'm curious why the Patriots would be a 4.5-point favorite. The game is an Indy. Colts are defending Super Bowl champs, and Peyton Manning is still the quarterback. Yeah, we kind of talked about this a little earlier, Brian, if you missed it. The reason the Patriots are 4.5-point favorites is because the money is going on the Patriots. You know, the guys in Vegas, they take a look at the relative strengths and weaknesses of the two teams, of any two teams, when they set odds going in, based on my knowledge of how, sports books go at it and how bookies set odds. But honestly, They do it because they have a sense that that's where the money's going. And if they had made the Colts, you know, even a pick'em game or a slight favorite, I guarantee you the money would have been pouring in on the Patriots. It's because the perception is that the Patriots, you know, may be running up the score if they are. The perception is out there that they're doing it. And I think the people also realize the Patriots' offense is something rather extraordinary this season. I mean, extraordinary. We're talking about all-time NFL extraordinary. Yes, the Colts are the Super Bowl champs. Yes, Peyton Manning is still the quarterback. But they don't block and tackle. You know, their offense doesn't block and tackle. So they'll be in a race where they are probably going to be forced to outscore the Patriots in this game in order to have a chance to win the game. I think that they're probably capable of doing that, to be honest with you. But a lot of it depends on how well the Patriots' defense matches up this time with the Colts' offense. And here's where I think the real difference in this game may lie. Keep in mind now that the Colts have won three straight against the Pats. Don't you think that that's probably sticking somewhere in the craw of Bill Belichick and or Dean Pease, the defensive coordinator, and or guys like Richard Seymour and Teddy Bruschi and Mike Vrabel and Rodney Harrison, just to name a few? And wasn't their first and arguably biggest move of the offseason to address that defense that coughed up that 21-3 lead in the AFC Championship game last year? And so they went out and found a guy like Adalis Thomas to fulfill a need, to make them a little bit not only bigger, but also stronger and faster in what we termed was an aging linebacking core a year ago? Sure, absolutely. That's the biggest reason. And, of course, the receivers and everybody else, they came after. But Thomas was the first one. That was the first move the Patriots had to make in order to address making themselves better based on what the Colts did to them last year. So when you add Thomas into the mix and you have a healthy Harrison or you know a Harrison back in the fold and a healthy Seymour back into the fold, okay, don't think for a minute that the Patriots won't be up to the task to try to slow down the Colts this time. And I ultimately think that will be where the difference of this game will lie. Patriots will make a stop or the defense will force a turnover somewhere. All they need is one or two or maybe both of those things will happen when they need it to happen on Sunday, in order to give them just enough margin to win the game. That's personally what I think. Brian also asked, what's going on with Ellis Hobbs? Although he's a great returner, I thought this was going to be a huge year for him, but I think he's been rather disappointing. I don't know why you even say that. I mean, the guy's got a 108-yard kickoff return, Brian. How is that disappointing? I mean, maybe you're talking about in terms of defensive backs. Now, I think he's doing an adequate job, but I think the Patriots are also healthier in the secondary than they've been in quite some time, so there's less reliance on him playing every snap of the football. I think that's all it is. You just got more bodies back there. You're able to throw in fresh guys, and I think you'll see plenty of him on Sunday. You might even see him make a play or two. But because you've got healthier bodies, and you've still got some talented guys back there, he hasn't needed to be the all-world defensive back like you've probably, you know, apparently you expect him to be. John says, sick, sick, sick. Sick of Peyton Almighty doing the entire first verse of the Hokey Pokey before each play. I long for the day when his center turns around and slaps him in the head. Sick of the running up the score argument. Howie Long put it best when he said the Redskins had the same 60 minutes to put up points. They didn't. Sick of those so-called sports writers bad-mouthing us, good versus evil comparison. Completely unprofessional and biased opinions. They hate us, they always will. Win, lose, it doesn't matter, so why bother? Journalism majors who watch football and now think they know the game better than the best coaches on the planet. Sick of players. Players crying about the score. The Redskins D player that whined about the patch. You have successfully displayed yourself as a huge baby. One more that bugged me. We embarrassed a Hall of Fame coach. Okay, so if it was a cheesy coach who encourages his players to cheat, don't worry, Jeff Fisher, I won't mention you by name. Would it have been acceptable to beat them by 45? Peyton, you giant-headed advertising bleep. Dungy comparing Belichick to Barry Bonds, and lately the cast of PFW with their comments about how Harrison sucks, Bruschi's useless, etc., etc. Congrats, you jackasses. I've now officially switched away from you and am now listening to the Playbook Show. God. Sucky, sucky, sucky.
Really?
No kidding. Thanks, John, for the compliment. But, you know, sometimes you got to admit, you know, in a lot of instances like PFW or even on this show or any talk radio show, sports talk radio show you listen to, a lot of things get said in order to flame opinion, you know, in order to, you know, basically get people to react. So I guess somebody did their job on you. I appreciate your email. Alex says, I have a question. I did my picks for the week but wanted to know what you thought. Oh, Gord. I'm not going to go through all of these, Alex. You did pick New England over the Colts. I would have to say that the only one that I really disagree with, I don't know, where's the Jacksonville-New Orleans game this week? I'm not so sure. I think New Orleans is beginning to get on a bit of a roll. Other than that, I'd have to say that I'm with you on just about everything else. Okay, so there you go. I hope you're listening, and I hope that answered your question. Somebody obviously has a pool that they're not performing very well in. This one comes from Luis, who says, hello, John, from Tampa. Hope you're doing good. I think division rivalries are overrated. Just think of those boring Monday nighters when you have the Packers and Bears or Redskins and Cowboys. Good rivalries arise when two teams are very good simultaneously, just like the Patriots and Colts. He says, I would put their rivalry in the same category with the Giants and 49ers of the late 80s and the Steelers and Raiders of the 70s, who all happen to play in the same conference. Maybe familiarity then breeds that sort of, I guess, dislike between those teams, Luis? Good. I appreciate your answering the question. Thank you for taking the time to do that. That's the question of the day that I want you to answer. Okay? Rivalries. Where does the Patriots and Colts rank in terms of rivalries in NFL history? Should it be considered now, number one, in this day and age? Is it the top rivalry in the NFL? And number two, where does it rank in terms of some of the great rivalries in the history of the NFL, at least in your experience? Does it deserve to be there? That's what I'm hoping that you'll take some time to send me a note on. Webradio@patriots.com is the email address, 508-543-7482. That's the telephone number. I'm going to sneak in a timeout here. And then on the other side, we will hear from Patriots quarterback Tom Brady, and also in hour number two, the conference call with the CBS folks, Jim Nance, Phil Simms, and ex-Steelers coach Bill Cowher, all with their opinions and their thoughts on Pat's Colts this Sunday in Indianapolis. Coming up.
Playoff action is back in Foxborough. Once again, your New England Revolution have advanced to the MLS playoffs and are looking for a return trip to MLS Cup.
Drives it for him, and it's goal! 1-0 Revs! What a huge tally for New England!
Saturday, November 3rd at 7:30 p.m., Taylor Twellman, Pat Noonan, Matt Reese, and the rest of the Revs take to the field in Foxborough, and they want you there to cheer them on to victory.
Takes a touch, and buries it! 1-0 Revs! The sellout crowd in Foxborough rises to their feet.
Individual tickets start at just $18, and significant discounts are available for groups of 20 or more. Bring your family or group, and don't miss a minute of this exciting playoff match at Gillette Stadium. Call the Revolution Ticket Office today at 1-877-GET-REVS. That's 1-877-GET-REVS to get your playoff ticks.
Get your kicks.
And get the Revolution.
The Revolution.
All right, Jimmy, it's the big day, and we gotta go. Patriots kick off in an hour. Let's make sure we got everything.
All right, let's see. Face paint.
Check.
Helmets.
Check.
Foam fingers.
Check.
Jerseys.
Check.
Checks.
Check.
Check card.
Check.
That's everything!
Yeah, let's go, Pats!
Woo!
Let's go, Pats! Let's go, Pats! Let's go!
Check, check, check. That's right. If you really are a true Patriots fan, then you need to open a New England Patriots checking account from Bank of America today. You'll get checks, check cards, and even bank statements, all with the official New England Patriots logo. Bank of America is the official bank of the New England Patriots. So take advantage of this opportunity to make every day game day.
Let's go, Pats!
Woo!
And sign up for a New England Patriots checking account today. Bank of America. Bank of Opportunity.
Bank of America N.A. Member FDIC. New England Patriots trademarks, including the Patriots logo, are the property of New England Patriots L.P. and are used pursuant to a licensing agreement with New England Patriots L.P. 2007 Bank of America Corporation. All rights reserved.
Well, it's that time of year again where Sunday means you're doing something football. Whether it's tailgating in the parking lot, throwing the pigskin around, or just hanging in and watching the game on the tube, it's all about football. And when you're not watching football or playing football, well, I think we both know you're thinking football. And all that can make you a little hungry. That's why there's the tasty snack wrap from McDonald's. Snack wraps now come in your choice of three flavors. New Chipotle barbecue, honey mustard, and ranch. And they're available with grilled or crispy chicken. Delicious and easy to eat. It's the perfect game time snack. So grab one today. And when you do, if you're looking at that chicken select and it kind of reminds you of a quarterback in the middle of the pocket, except now he's surrounded by cheddar jack cheese, ranch sauce, and lettuce, well, maybe you're thinking just a little too much about football. McDonald's. I'm loving it.
Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle.
This is Patriots Playbook.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the seven route.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because okay. The backers are going to fast read over the top.
Next Sunday's game.
Want to go odd. 5.
Patriots play.
51 mirror.
And the rest of the 2007 NFL
because
season.
Because that guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
And some of the fun stuff in between.
Even. 51 grapes. Even. 51 grapes.
And now, here's John Rowe.
Come on, let's go. Let's go.
It's hour two of Patriots Playbook here on a Wednesday on Patriots.com Radio. I'm John Rook. Pats and Colts getting set for Sunday's 4:15 Eastern Time kickoff at the RCA Dome in Indianapolis. Glad to have you aboard. If you're a first-time listener or you're just stumbling onto the website or maybe you're a Colts fan and you want to hear what the enemy has to say, we're glad you're with us one way or the other. And by the way, feel free to contribute to the program. Even if your opinion may not be a popular one, I'd still like to hear from you. Webradio@patriots.com. Webradio@patriots.com is the email. 508-543-7482 is the telephone number. Our topic of conversation for the day, email question of the day, has to do with rivalries overall in the NFL and where you think Patriots-Colts ranks. First of all, is Patriots-Colts the present-day NFL rivalry? Is there another one in the NFL right now that ranks up there with the Patriots and the Colts as things presently stand amongst the 32 teams in the league? And number two, if it does, where does this rivalry rank? What is it? Does it, is it up there with some of the great ones of years gone by? Cowboys, Redskins, Raiders, Steelers, Cowboys, 49ers, Giants and 49ers, Giants and Jets. Where does it rank? Does it belong up there in the pantheon of great rivalries, great battles, great teams in the NFL history? I think by the very fact alone that this is the first time in the 88 years of the NFL, as we opened up with this number today in the first hour of the show, I think by the fact that this is the first time in the 88-year history of the NFL that you've had two teams at least 7-0 meet each other in the regular season. That puts this one right up there at the top.
Oh, I can't wait.
Yeah, well, I think we all kind of share that. And so it's our job to kind of hype it up and talk about it a little bit and get your response to it and get your thoughts on this game. Brian says, I'm only 21 years old, but since I've been watching football, I think the Pats and Colts are the number two rivalries since I've been watching football. I'd have to say that Raiders-Broncos are the biggest rivalry. You know, Brian, that's actually a good recent day rivalry. It seemed like, you know, especially I would say since the early to mid 80s, and they kind of kept it up through the 90s, and now even into the new decade, new century, Raiders and Broncos and the AFC West have been a passionate rivalry. It's been a little bit one-sided of late, so maybe it's taken a little of the luster off of that. But it always did seem like those two teams tried to decide things in that division. There's no doubt about that. So that's actually a good suggestion. He says, I can't wait for this weekend's game, the two best quarterbacks in the league, the two best teams. Undoubtedly, that's the case. And I'm sure that there are a lot of people around the entire league, not just fans in Indianapolis or New England, that feel the same way. This email comes from Ben in Nova Scotia. Hey, Ben, how are you? Says, I can't believe that I actually have a shared opinion with Fred Kirsch. But I completely agree with his comments yesterday in regards to the Bears trashing the Patriots. I, too, felt no anger toward the Bears for the simple fact that they were the superior team, and it was their job to show it. I have been a Pats fan for over 25 years, and we have suffered some big losses over the years, and now we are giving them. To me, it's simple. If your ownership group does not feel compelled to put a competitive team on the field, it is not the other team's responsibility to take pity on them. This is professional sports. These athletes are paid to perform at the highest level at all times. Now, in regards to the Colts, is anyone else terrified of how Manning is going to dismantle Hobbs? He plays so far off the receiver that even Eric, the leg, in his fantasy league could get open. A little PFW reference there. I hope that if given the opportunity, we do everything we can to demoralize the Colts and secure the Colts and secure the vital home field advantage. Keep the faith, Fred, the true voice of the Patriots. Ben in Nova Scotia. Thanks, Ben. First of all, in terms of running up the score, you know, you're right on. You're absolutely right on. And I think the people that are saying that, you know, the Patriots are somehow displaying a lack of class or sportsmanship, whatever the case may be, just they're revisionist historians is what they are. Either that or they're just plain stupid. You only have to go back to, what, 2004, 2003 to find the Colts doing the very same thing that the Patriots are doing now. 1985 Bears, great example. Anybody get really upset with the Bears for crunching the Patriots 46-10 and crunching people left and right with arguably the greatest defense of all time? No. What about the 2000 or the 1999 Rams, the quote-unquote greatest show on turf? They put up some big numbers. Anybody criticize them for running up the score? Not to this extent. And so now the Patriots are accused of running up the score. Why? 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 Because there's a perceived vendetta that, you know, or trying to get revenge on the rest of the league because of the whole Spygate issue? No. No, that's not all of it. I mean, like I said earlier, there's no doubt that that little spell that we went through there is going to serve as a great motivator for this team because now you're calling their integrity into question. You're saying that, you know, for whatever reason, you know, they took an unfair advantage this year and maybe even tainted their Super Bowl years of previous years. And that's not going to set well with anybody in that locker room. Now what you've done is you've pissed off the Giant is what you've done. You've made him mad. And this is the way the Giant is going to treat you when you make him mad. This is why you had, you know, Joe Gibbs, you know, basically saying, well, we should be a big underdog going into last week's game. Tom Brady wasn't buying any of that. He knew that the Redskins would be somewhat upset, but the Patriots still went out and did what they had to do. And they hung 52 points, 52, 52 points on the NFL's number four rated defense last week. Oh, and by the way, the Colts are also rated number four in the NFL in total defense this week. Just thought I'd bring that up. One other thing that I wanted to bring up is we get off to a Tom Brady now for you. Brady's touchdown interception ratio this season, 15-1. He's got 30 touchdown passes and two, count them, two interceptions all season long. By the way, the NFL record touchdown to interception ratio over a full season is held by the one and only Peyton Manning. And this was 3 years ago when he had the 49 touchdown season and only threw 10 interceptions. So by my new math, that's 4.9-1. Brady right now is 15-1. I wonder how he looks at comparisons with Peyton Manning. I'm sure he's going to get asked that question. Members of the Patriots media now meeting with quarterback Tom Brady.
I like that, Stevie.
Nice. Nice matchup. Let's just discuss this big matchup of the undefeated teams and going against Peyton.
Yep, it's going to be... I'm sure this week is going to be long in a sense to get to the game, but it's going to go fast as well. And playing a great team, I think in every phase of the game, there we know them just as well as we know any opponent. Probably we play, and they do so many things well. Very well coached. They play extremely hard. They play great in the second half. They're a clutch team. So. We got to play our best game. So I think everybody's excited.
Tom, I know that when you prepare for defense, you prepare overall with everything. But when you look at Indianapolis, how much of a factor is Bob Sanders in what you try to do on the field?
He's a great playmaker for that team, and I think he brings a great level of consistency and dependability for that defense. He tackles so well. He's obviously a leader.
you know, when he's not in a game. I think he's able to make up for a lot of things that happen on defense. He doesn't bite on play action. He always seems to. We always talk about players that guess, and he's one of those guys that always is guessing right. And it's not that he's guessing; he's very instinctive, and he's always in the right place. He's a great player. He's one of the best strong safeties we play. He's a great tackler. And they got a group full of guys, and I think they really all feed off Bob.
Thomas, is Bill Belichick the same before every game, or can you detect any difference in him this week, say, for instance?
No, I mean he's very consistent. That's one great aspect of his coaching is he's very black and white. He doesn't he always kind of speaks exactly what he sees, and he knows the challenges that we face this week. And we had a squad meeting this morning that he's always on top of things. And I wish us players would be as on top of things as he is always. So he knows how important this game is for this team, and anytime you match up against one of the best teams in pro football, it's always great to see where you stand. And they've proven over the last bunch of years that they're really the team to beat. So we've got to go out and perform certainly a lot better than we have the last three times we played them.
Tom, what impresses you most about him?
I mean, what's not to be impressed by? I guess he does everything well. He throws the short stuff. He throws the deep stuff. He's a leader. Once again, he's a clutch performer. He's always in command of the team and of the offense. He's a great actor. He can do it all.
Tom, what is it about Belichick that makes players so believe in him that maybe the public doesn't see or doesn't really know about?
Well, I think, like I said, he's very consistent in the way he approaches each week, and he's able to break down teams and understand what get you beat, and also understands the way you need to play the game in order for you to play your best. I think there's some coaches that say, all right, we got to stop the run, the pass, the draw, the screen, the the trap, we got to stop, and they give you 25 things, so you're going out there go, what the hell am I going to stop? He breaks it down to a couple things, and it's usually I've been playing for him for 8 years, and he's never wrong. And usually we come in Monday morning and look at the evaluations, and if we do the things that he really talked about, we usually come out ahead. And he, he's a great leader, and he's a great coach to play for. And we all believe in him, and we trust him. And when he always says he makes decisions that are in the best interest of the team, he truly means that.
Tom, what you just said about Peyton, how you characterized him. Would you say that about yourself? Could you describe yourself in that same vein?
I think.
Yeah.
Can I act? I don't know. You guys tell me. Probably not. No, that's definitely not like him. I try to just drop back and throw the ball. The guy who's open, and he's probably got a better arm. He's probably faster. He's bigger. He's probably smarter. He's proven over the years how consistent he is. So I've always looked up to Peyton and the way he plays. And, he's gotten the best of us the last three times we played him. So we got a great challenge, and hopefully we're all up for it. Wow. It's really, when you play the Colts, it's a team effort. It's not this offense against their defense. It's their defense versus our offense. Especially, it's really, you have to play a complimentary game. It just, all phases of the game have to be clicking. It's just no letdown. And Coach always talks about playing for 60 minutes. And I think there's no better example of a team that you have to play 60 minutes against, because if you play for 59 minutes and 30 seconds, they got a chance to beat you. And you can't let down against them.
Tom, obviously a lot's been made about the plays you guys have been making as players, but how much of a factor has Josh been in that, the game planning, the play calling?
Yeah, Josh has done a great job all year. I think he's done a great job since he took over the role as play caller. I think he has the respect of all the players and all the coaches. he's a great leader for us. He always brings energy. He always brings excitement and enthusiasm, and he's extremely smart. It's great that he started on defense early in his career under Coach Belichick. So when he evaluates defenses, he looks at them through really a defensive perspective, which allows you to find the strengths and weaknesses of what that team does. And, you know, very much like our offense does, that's what we try to do. We don't try to just, you know, bang our head against the wall for 60 minutes. You try to find mismatches and try to exploit those the best you can. But Josh does. I don't think there's anybody else that does a good job as Josh in doing that.
Tom, when you evaluate your own player and that of another quarterback, does passer rating, does it figure into it, or is it a rather obscure formula to
you? Well, I think statistics in general for a quarterback don't mean a whole lot in that. I mean, you can tell a guy's playing pretty good or not. I mean, you could tell that when you look at the film. I said earlier in the week, I mean, last week after the Miami game, when I throw a 3-yard pass and Dante runs for 30 yards, I mean, how great of a play is that by the quarterback? It's just, you know, you could throw an 8-yard completion and not, you know, run for a touchdown and have a lesser passer rating. So what is that? It just doesn't mean a whole lot. Touchdowns to me, I mean, those are very much team goals and scoring goals. I think that's, you know, really something that the team strives to be able to do each year, is to score points. I mean, that's really why Coach always says he puts us out there. But, you know, in terms of probably I think the most important thing, and Drew Bledsoe gave me this advice early in my career, I think it was the first game we were sitting on the bench for a Tampa Bay game, and he said, you know, Tom, he says, the thing about the NFL is it's usually the teams that the quarterback that makes less bad plays. And if your bad plays are incompletions, great. You know, you can't be really – I don't think you can be a great quarterback if, hey, you can look great on one play and then throw an interception the next play or take a sack or call the wrong play or hold on to the ball too long and get strip sacked. I mean, you really want to develop a consistent level of play by making good play after good play, even if a good play ends up being throwing the ball away on, you know, 3rd and 15. So – you know, I think that's what the team looks for. They look for, you know, a very dependable player that, hey, if the guy's open, you got to throw and complete it. You can't miss open receivers, and especially playing against the Colts. I mean, you can't miss your opportunities, whether it be down the field, you know, on third down, because usually when you punt the ball to these guys, they're going to take it and go the other way with it, whether it's their own 5-yard line they're getting on or, you know, your 5-yard line.
Tom, I know how much you appreciate being able to play the game, go out every Sunday. Comment specifically on how much you're enjoying playing with this receiving corps?
Well, I mean, like you said, I enjoy playing every year. We've had great receivers here for a long time, so I think I've been fortunate enough to play with all of them, from David Patton to David Givens to Deion, Troy. You know, and this group has worked extremely hard. The new guys have really worked hard to understand the offense, understand what this team's about and what makes it successful. And they just do what they're asked. And everybody appreciates that. And it's a very unselfish group that works hard and puts the team first. So, you know, they rank right up there with the other great receiver tandems we've had here. I mean, it's hard to rank. We have pretty good years around here. So, you know, we're only eight games into it.
Your team has had its share of negative press. There was the videotaping issue with the middle ends.
Yep.
Now there is some talk about piling it on in games.
Yep.
Is this a rallying point for the players? To some degree, are you guys playing with a chip on your shoulder?
I think like Coach says, we look at each opportunity on the field as a way to get better and to improve. And we play for as long as the clock says 0-0. So, I mean, that's an interesting question of, you know, scoring too many points, or, you know, I don't know if that's ever been a problem here in the past, or I think you just try to do the best you can do. And, you know, as an offense, that's what we're trying to do. We're not trying to let other teams tee off on us or let them get the best of us. You just, hey, if you call a play, we want to make it a great play. And I don't think you know, we want to come off the field saying, God, that was great. I hope they feel good about themselves because, you know, we just got the crap knocked out of us. I don't think that's really what, you know, the approach an offensive football team should take. And I don't think that's the approach any team takes, to tell you the truth.
Tom, in this rare instance, is the hype maybe right? Is this matchup deserving to build up?
I hope so. I hope it's a blowout, actually, but I'm sure nobody else would like that. They're a great football team, and I think we've proven over the last 8 weeks that you know, we can play at a pretty high level ourselves. So, you know, two undefeated teams, and obviously with the history with these teams, it makes for a great matchup. And like I said, it's going to be a long week, but it's going to be a short week too. And I think you look back on games, you know, always throughout your career, and you look at ones that probably stand out. And you know, anytime you play the Colts, it's always an exciting game for all the players and all the coaches because, you know, when you're playing them, you're playing the best.
So. What one player that's not getting a lot of media attention do you think will have a large impact on this game?
Wow. Randy Moss? Oh, he gets too much. I don't know. That's a great question.
Think about that. We'll get back to
you. Yeah. Maybe tomorrow here? Nah. Hi, guys. Thank you.
Patriots quarterback Tom Brady with members of the media just a short while ago at Gillette Stadium, and some good comments there on the matchup with the Colts. And who can blame him for wanting there to be a blowout? I mean, you know, he's a professional. He has pride. He wants his team to win. He wants to be, you know, pushing on all cylinders. You know, he's had it done to him in reverse, so why wouldn't he want to expect something like that? Why wouldn't he want to go after something like that? I think that just personifies the entire mindset of this team right now. I mean, you know, these guys aren't really looking so much at the scoreboard. They're going out there and they're playing from start to finish, from whistle blow to whistle blow. And if they hang half a 100 on somebody or they shut somebody out, well, then, you know, hey, it's not their fault. By the way, a couple of milestones that Tom is approaching, in case you were not aware. With 30 touchdown passes, Tom needs one more touchdown pass to tie Babe Parilli's single-season record of 31 touchdown passes, which he set back in 1964. So he's one away from tying the mark, two away from setting the new single-season touchdown passing mark for the Patriots. The other number I wanted to bring out, I can't find it. He needs six more passing touchdowns, six total, to pass Steve Grogan and become the Patriots' all-time career leader in touchdown passes. Grogs had 182 in his career. He needs six more to pass Grogan and become the all-time touchdown thrower in Patriots history. So, again, when it doesn't really seem like he's been around near as long as some of the other guys in Patriots history, and when you consider what the Patriots history has been before this, you know, Super Bowl era, just gives you a bit of an idea, I think, what kind of an impact he truly has had, not only on the game, but of the Patriots as well. Email comes from Michael, who says, I want to just say or tell the world that the Patriots are the best, and we are going to blow the Colts out like we've been doing. Now, if Brady gets hurt doing what he's paid to do, then great. But then to sit him down and get him rusty, well, that's foolish, and anybody who thinks that is a fool. Matter of fact, if the Pats don't blow him out, I'll walk naked on the street. Oh, okay, forget that. Thank you very much, Michael. Beautiful. You get all kinds here. Thanks, Michael. Appreciate that, buddy. And don't bother to tell us where you're from so we can look the other way. Fred from Earth says, do you guys agree that the winner of this next Pats-Colts game will go undefeated, not including the playoffs? Colts are the only team to have a shot at beating the Pats. Yeah, I think that they have. I think both, whoever survives this game, definitely has a chance to go undefeated. I don't know that they will. I still think that the Patriots, should they win this weekend, have some games that can be considered some, you know, red flags. Philly is one. Baltimore is another. I don't know that anything else would be, but those two certainly stand out, I think, as you look at the rest of the schedule at this point in time. As far as the Colts are concerned, we touched on this just a little bit yesterday, though, Fred, but if the Colts beat the Patriots, they have next week at San Diego, which is going to be their toughest game the rest of the year. Following that, I think the Colts would probably win out. So I think they've got one left. The Patriots arguably have one or two left that you consider to be significantly challenging football games. By the way, he says, I do not root for laundry, but for players. Like Tom Casale, I like talent foremost, but also humility, perseverance, and hard work. There's nothing I hate more than arrogance, trash talk, and a look-at-me attitude. So I am a fan of Tom Brady and will remain so even if traded. Okay. You know what, Fred, that's fine, and I think that's a great attitude to have. I actually wish more fans rooted for individuals as opposed to teams or laundry. But I think it's human nature to root for laundry because that laundry represents who we are and where we're from. And we're all very regionalistic in that point of view. And so that's why I'm saying, you know, hey, that's why, you know, we have people here who root for the Patriots who previous to this year never rooted and would never have rooted for a guy like Randy Moss. But they do now because he's wearing the Patriots blue and silver. So, you know, while I think it's great that you can do that, Fred, and you can root for individuals, the majority of the fans are not like you. I'm sure that you probably realize that. And you probably even relish that, I would think. You know, I mean, why the heck not, right? Okay, let's see if we can sneak in one more here, and then we're going to get off to our CBS conference call so you can hear what some of these so-called experts have to say about this matchup on Sunday. Simon says, Dear Pretty Boy Paul and the PFW Gorillas, should we be saving this for them, Jace? I know it's not politically correct, but am I allowed to say I want us to run up the score on the Colts and then dance all over their center field logo? I also want Adam Vinatieri to miss every field goal and extra point. I'll be listening on Cowlack Beach at dawn on Monday morning here, and if the Pats are dancing, I will be dancing too up and down the beach with my bottle of tequila. He is from Phuket, Thailand. Simon the food hater. Thank you, Simon. Appreciate that. I'll make sure that we, Jason, make sure you save this for Tom and the PFW guys because, you know, my guess is that they definitely want to, they definitely want to hear from him, right? How can we not, right? Okay. Here's one more that we want to jump into. This one comes, this is good, from Josh in Arlington, Virginia. And says he's a former PFW emailer of the week. Very cool. He says, hey, Rook. Below is a link to a great article regarding running up the score by the Patriots and the whiners who keep complaining about it. I was embarrassed for ESPN after listening to Monday Night Football pregame the other night. The large majority of the commentators sounded like such babies, and after looking at this article, Steve Young is a total hypocrite. The meat and potatoes of it is that Young was very down on the Pats and said running up the score was tainting their accomplishments this season. I laughed out loud several times after reading this article. What a fraud. The most compelling excerpt is this. Finally, Young also kind of forgot to mention how the 49ers treated the woeful Falcons during his tenure in San Francisco, which is pretty much the same way you treat the water in your toilet bowl. Here are just some of the scores of the San Francisco-Atlanta series during Young's tenure leading the post-Montana 49ers. 1992, 56-17, 41-3. 1994, 42-3, 50-14. You know, if the 49ers hadn't hung 16 fourth-quarter points on the Falcons in that 50-14 tune-up for their Super Bowl run, maybe it wouldn't have tarnished San Francisco's image so drastically. Interesting. Thank you, Josh. And I appreciate that you're emailing that article. I actually had glanced at it and hadn't had a chance to read it from start to finish, but it's part of the argument that we're sort of making and that people like you are making for us here this week on the program when it comes to talking about running up the score and whether it's the right thing or the wrong thing to do. Just play football. That's all you really need to concern yourself with. Play football. If you can't stop them, well, then shame on you for not being able to stop them, right? Okay, today we're going to give you the full context interview. This is one of the things that we really like doing here on the program, especially inside the playbook. Can't really get this in your regular sports talk radio show, so we'll toot our own horn here for just a moment. But that's one of the advantages of having a program like this and a venue like this doing web radio. Yesterday, while we were on the air with the program yesterday, in fact, after Jim Nance had visited with us here on the program, CBS Television held a conference call with their announcers and a couple of their production crew, but their announcers primarily for Sunday's game between the Pats and the Colts. Jim Nance was a part of it, along with Phil Simms and Bill Cowher, who, of course, Coach Cowher is a part of the NFL pregame show on CBS now, 1 year from his removal and stepping down as head coach of the Pittsburgh Steelers. So you know that a guy like Cowher, who's been a victim of the Patriots in the past, would have something to say, right? Obviously, Jim Nantz told you here on the program yesterday what he thought. He goes into a little more detail, and of course, Phil Simms chimes in with his 2 cents worth on the Pats and the Colts and the matchup and running up the score and all that kind of good stuff. So we wanted to hear, wanted you to hear their responses to the questions asked of them by members of the media nationwide who cover the National Football League for a living. They may be beat reporters of teams all over the country, or they could just be members of the media from outlets across the country. One way or the other, this is how the nation feels about the Pats and the Colts coming in on Sunday. So our conference call from CBS is upcoming. Tomorrow's Patriots Playbook at 2 p.m. Eastern Time will feature locker room interviews with members of the Patriots. We'll also hear the conference calls from Tony Dungy and the Colts tomorrow's program. And, of course, Russell Baxter, our NFL research coordinator from ESPN. He'll join us tomorrow, as he always does on Thursdays, to look at the big matchups around the league and, of course, the Colts and the Pats. Here's the conference call with CBS, Jim Nantz, Phil Simms, and Bill Cowher.
Hello there, Leanne. How are you?
Good. I'm joined by 45 friends of yours on this call.
Well, they've had me, Leslie Ann and her team have had me on radio shows here today and since 9:30 this morning, so we've been talking about it a lot. And someone asked the question about, or introduced me by saying, well, here to help hype the game is Jim Nantz of CBS. And, of course, I jumped all over that because, you know, let's be honest. I mean, I'm not going to be able to hype anything or bring one extra person to the television set because this game, it speaks for itself. You know, we're here today to talk about, you know, things, some of the nuances to look for in this game, but it's going to be magnificent. We don't need to hype. I hate the word anyway. But you look at it, what you have here is the rivalry of its time, rivalry of its era. It's been this way for a long time since New England had Indianapolis's number and Peyton couldn't beat them. Of course, they've turned that around in the last three matchups, the Colts have. But we're coming off of that AFC championship game. We've got Dungy and Belichick, Manning and Brady, two high-powered offenses, both teams undefeated. You know, it's spectacular. I'm just looking forward to sitting back and listening to Phil Simms on Sunday afternoon.
Hey, let's listen to Phil Simms now. Phil?
That'll be something new if he sits back and listens to me.
I'll let you get in there a little bit.
But, yeah, that's all right. You give me a little air. Look, I do games every week. I'm always excited. Every game has its own personality and a lot of things that I want to see because I'm inquisitive and want to know. But I have to admit, I've looked forward to this game for a few weeks, and there's so many things to talk about. I guess what intrigues me, of course we're excited to do it, but what intrigues me, how they both teams will view their opposition this week and how they will go about trying to win the game. And I think that history has shown us and it's shown me as a TV analyst that they're both willing to do something different, especially the New England Patriots. So I can't wait to find out. Can't wait to watch on Sunday.
And he probably feels really lonely without all his sidekicks here. You can say whatever. You got much more time to speak.
Coach
Bill Cowher.
Thanks, Leslie. No, I just will go on record as saying, you know, this is the first time I've had an opportunity to kind of sit back and watch the rest of the NFL in my new role. When you're coaching, you kind of become tunnel vision, and you don't worry about anybody else except your team. And just watching these first 8 weeks, it's been fun to kind of watch these two teams kind of separate themselves from the rest of the league. And that's how they're playing right now. These two teams are playing another level than I think any other team in the league are playing. And the fact that we can get a matchup like this halfway through the year, I think as a fans are going to get the best of this. I mean, this is what they want to see. I think it's great for the league, and I think there's so many intriguing matchups throughout this game, and we'll talk about them, start talking about them tomorrow up until the game time. But two quality teams, two well-coached teams, and I'm kind of looking forward to the game myself.
Okay. Tony, do you want to explain the process for questions?
Absolutely. At this time, if you'd like to ask a question, please press *1 on your touchtone telephone. If your question has been answered and you wish to be removed from the queue, please press the pound key. Again, to ask a question, please press *1 on your touchtone telephone. Our first question will come from Jim Carlisle with Ventura County Star. Please go ahead.
I wanted to ask
anybody who'd like to answer, talk about the two coaches a little bit, about their similarities and their differences and what it is that sets them apart from other coaches in the league.
Coach Cowher, won't you take that?
Yeah. Well, I will say, number one, obviously, is their success. I think the thing is that they're very similar. These are two guys that they've paid their dues. They've both been defensive coordinators and successful defensive coordinators that, yeah, they came upon the luxury, I think, and I felt this way when I got Ben Roethlisberger. You take a defensive coordinator who becomes a head coach and give him a quarterback, that's a good combination. And I just think these are two guys that have great respect for the game, great knowledge of the game, and you can just tell by looking at them that the players certainly respond to them. Tony's probably a guy that you'll see a little bit more animated on the sideline than Bill. But again, I think it's I think these two teams are a little bit different from the standpoint you watch Indianapolis and they built their team through the draft where, you know, I think when you look at New England, the fact that, you know, a lot of their skill positions were built through free agency. And I think it's just an interesting, you know, approaches that these two different coaches have taken and organizations have taken. But, you know, they're both very, very much looked upon as being the cream of the crop in the coaching profession.
Jim, this is Phil Sims. I'll just say this. You know, Tony Dungy, Jim and I have met with him many times during the games, and, you know, he comes in and talks to us, and he's calm and talks to us that way, and that's exactly how he talks to his players in meetings. We go to their practices. You never hear the coaches say anything in practice. They talk in a very low tone of voice. The only person you really hear at Indianapolis Colts practice is Peyton Manning, because he's telling everybody what to do. And so his style is so different from Bill Belichick's. I asked Bill Belichick once before the Super Bowl down in Houston. Of course, I knew the answer. I said, how would you describe your coaching style? And he says, I coach through fear. And, you know, I tell people they better play better or I'll bench them or it'll cost them their job. And that's kind of how he learned. And I don't know if he's still exactly that same way, but he definitely has a different style than Tony Dungy. And their teams, the way their players act, you see it all. And I think that's why it's caught the attention of America over the years, because even if you don't follow football, you can see the differences in the personalities of the coaches and the teams, and you want to see what's going to happen.
Thank you. Our next question will come from Tom Padula with USA Today. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
For Phil or Bill, a lot of the attention has gone to Tom Brady and his receivers and the skill players that New England has. Could you each talk about the offensive line and what that means to the Patriots' success?
Well, Tom, I'll say this. They've always kept – Bill Belichick has always you look at the good teams in the NFL, and it's amazing. I don't know, Coach Cowher could answer this better than me. But, boy, if I was a head coach, I think the first thing I'd do is make sure my offensive line at least gives all my skill guys a chance, because it just ruins your team if they don't play well. And the Patriots have drafted. They've moved players in and out. I've been up there in years where they would substitute guys during the game and just move them because they were trying to find the right combinations. And for the Indianapolis Colts, geez, Howard Mudd, the offensive line coach, you know, so many coaches there. Tom Moore, the offensive coordinator. They have so many positions that haven't moved. And the players, they groom an offensive lineman. It seems like they can keep them healthy. And they play, it truly is a unit. And, of course, you add Peyton Manning to it, who gets rid of the football, who gets them in the right plays, all this. And you get greatness. And just in the last couple of years, have people finally taken notice that, hey, this Indianapolis offensive line is pretty good. And it's extremely well coached, and I think it's a very good story.
Well, and I concur with Phil. I mean, I think when you look at New England and both, you know, and Indianapolis, but New England, that's always been a strength of theirs, and I've always noticed that playing against them. And I think the thing that gives credence to that, if you look at both these quarterbacks,
the amount of verbiage that they give, certainly we all, it's well documented with Peyton Manning's calling plays. I mean, you can't do that unless you have a veteran offensive line who understands it. And, I mean, you watch, you know, Tom Brady does the same thing. He's always pointing out protections. And, you know, he was one of the toughest guys we had to get to blitz-wise when we played against him. And because he did a very good job of orchestrating that line. But you got to have a line that can communicate, that works with one another. And I think that's the one thing both these coaches understand and recognize is that, you know, I don't care whether you run the ball or pass the ball. If you don't have an offensive line, you can't do either. It starts right there, you know, with that. And I think they both recognize that, and I think that's a big part of the success both these teams have.
Thank you.
Welcome, Tom.
Thank you. Our next question will come from David Barron with the Houston Chronicle. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Prashan, speaking from part of the 7% of the country that will not get the game, I'm getting a lot of questions from readers and viewers asking about the possibility of running the game on the HD channel or running it on some other channel. Obviously, you can't do that, but I basically needed you to tell me that you can't do that so I could tell people that they can't do that. So, obviously, there's a lot of people that want to watch the game, but they can't because you'll be beating the Texans and the Raiders game.
I'm sympathetic and I appreciate that, and it's a good question to ask, but you know, just because the game has a much higher level of magnitude doesn't mean we can change the NFL rules where you can only bring one game into a market unless you want to buy the DirecTV package. So it's not a rule that the NFL is gonna bend. And if they bend it for us this week, you know, who's to say in a certain situation when another network has a really good game, they couldn't go and ask for the same thing. So unfortunately, rules are rules, and you got to live by them no matter what the no matter what the week is.
So just briefly, Jim, for your fellow Texans and season ticket holders and others, what will they be missing if they don't have it? Direct TV NFL Sunday ticket.
Besides Jim?
What's that?
Besides Jim?
Besides Jim, yeah. I'm sure they're going to be really upset about that. They're missing, in all likelihood, the preview of yet another tilt in the AFC title game. They're probably missing a game that's going to be every bit as exciting and high-scoring as what we had back in January. Maybe they even open it up a little bit more, if that's possible. That game, was in the 30s, and the way New England's going, averaging 50 points a game here the last 3 weeks, and I don't see any reason why that's going to slow down, or Indianapolis is going to slow down. I mean, you look at what Brady did in that championship game last year with Rashay Caldwell and Jabbar Gaffney on the outside, along with Troy Brown in the slot. It's a little bit different picture for them. I definitely think Indianapolis has improved too on both sides of the ball. So. That's a great question you asked, though, because, you know, if you fed them, if you cannot, obviously you can't violate the rules, you can't rewrite the rules, but, you know, the Texans and the Raiders is going to your market, and I'm sure there's a lot more people, as great as our game's going to be in Indianapolis, but down there I'm sure they still would rather see their Texans. You know that's true. And they're going to miss Phil Simms at his best, so that's the other thing.
Oh, you're saying I'm not always in my best?
It's just going to go to another level.
Oh, okay. Thank you, gentlemen.
They're going to miss one of the five highest-rated television shows of the year, sports or otherwise. Number one being the Super Bowl, number two being the AFC Championship, number three is going to be this game, and tied for fourth will be the Patriots, Dallas, and the finals of American Idol. So there you have it.
More information from Jim.
Thank you. Our next question will come from John Tomaze with the Boston Herald. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hey, this is for Phil and Coach Cower. I'm just curious to hear your thoughts on the Patriots' margin of victory this year and if either of you feel the Pats have violated any unwritten rules as far as running up the score.
Coach. Okay, well, I can tell you, my opinion right now while looking at that is I see a football team that plays with a tremendous sense of purpose and focus, and you know, I'm not so sure when they're out there playing or even looking at the scoreboard. I mean, they're out there to get off the field on defense or out there to score every time they get the ball. And, you know, the fact that, you know, you have some of your premier players in the game with the margins being what they are, that's Bill's prerogative. I mean, I think, you know, that's his decision, and I think the risk that he's weighing is that, you know, that those guys could get hurt in those situations. But, you know, that's his decision as a coach, and he has the right to do that. So I don't know if it had anything to do with the players. I just think that this is a team right now is kind of playing, like I said, with a tremendous sense of purpose every time they step on the field. And, you know, and Bill has them playing that way right now. And, you know, I don't know if I'd be willing to risk that. It's a risk and reward type of thing. But he's playing them. They're playing at a very high level, but that's the coach's prerogative.
You know, John, it's Phil Sims. It's something Jim Nance and I hopefully will talk a little bit about during the game if we do have that opportunity. Of course, it's going to be beat to death between now and game time. But, you know, I played for a coach and Bill Parcells, and he always said to me, you know, to us, I'll coach my team. That's all the energy and things. I can only focus on my team. Let them worry about themselves. And I have not seen the Redskin game. I will get it in the mail hopefully today sometime. I'm really anxious to watch it. And, you know, a lot of coaches believe you don't worry about injuries. You play your guys, and, you know, you can't protect them. It's like, well, don't play them in the preseason at all then if you're worried about it. So there's some issues there, and it is bringing up some controversy, and I think that always feeds in to helping the New England Patriots. They love controversy. You know, I look at, and Jim Nance and I, we've met many times with Mike Vrabel, Teddy Bruschi, Rodney Harrison, you know, Tom Brady, you name it, they look forward to the battle, and they're willing to battle from start to finish. And you've got to prove, as the opposition, that you're willing to fight that long. And all this, to me, really feeds into what they love. They love the turmoil. They like they like the action. And as my dad once said to me, you know, be careful when you get in a fight. When you're fighting somebody who doesn't care about winning and losing, he just likes the action. You know, be leery of those guys. And the Patriots, they love the action. And all this stuff that you read about, everything that's gone on this year, I truly believe feeds into the atmosphere that they love.
Just to follow up on that, so the whole Spygate thing, do you feel like there's a part of them that just wants to say bleep you to everyone who doubted their accomplishments in the wake of that?
You know, they're typical athletes, I think, and Coach Cowher knows it too. I'm sure he gave his team 100 speeches in his career. They don't respect us. And this is the same thing. It's just something you put up there, and it's amazing what athletes will buy into because they're looking forward to because there's nothing better than us against the world or me against you. And, yes, I believe whatever you want to call it, Spygate, are they running up the score, just start going on the list. There are all issues that they put up there and go, it's us against them. So,
I don't think there's any question that what they're doing on the field is totally related to what happened at the end of week one. Because all of us in the media took that opportunity to go back and review and somehow attach what happened there with the Spygate episode, that whole debacle, and try to, some of us took it so far as to say that this stained their three championships. How did they win? Oh, no wonder they won, because they cheated. So now they've had their championships, they've had their integrity called into question, and maybe it's not something that's verbalized, you know, in the sacred setting of a locker room where it's just the coach and his staff and 53 players. Maybe it's not even something that has to be talked about, but I think they've all internalized it. And I think that they're inflicting that punishment on a weekly basis with that right at their very core.
Thank you very much.
Welcome, John.
Thank you. Our next question will come from Phil Richards with the Indianapolis Star. Please go ahead.
Phil, as a guy who played the position at a high level for a long time, I wonder how anxious you are every week to get in the film room and look at Brady and Manning.
Extremely. You know, and I tell you this, and Jim knows, I watch very closely, and I pay attention to everything because I'm always afraid one of them is going to ask me a question about the game, too. You know, so I'm going to, you know, because Peyton will go, well, did you see that coverage? They did this, and he'll go through the whole thing, and I go, oh, yeah, and I want to know. I don't want to have to lie, or I don't want him to catch me. And the same with Tom Brady. So I watch it closely. I like to see what they're doing physically, both of them, and I like to see the concepts that the coaches are coming up with. And how teams approach them, and I'm fascinated by it, and I say this too, you know, the NFL has changed
People always ask me, is it different when you played to now? And my answer was, well, not really, for a long time. But it's changing because they're putting more responsibility in the hands of the quarterback. The game is getting more dynamic with the throwing, and it's throwing down the field, which is exciting to the fans. It's exciting for me as an analyst. And these two quarterbacks are a new generation of where more franchises and coaches are going to have to develop and trust and build these type of quarterbacks because that's what's happening to the league. You know, I watched last night, Green Bay, Denver. I saw two teams that you go, wow, we know Green Bay's got Brett Favre, but I see Jay Cutler on the other side going, you know, he's the next guy in line to be Brady and Manning if the team develops and he, of course, improves just a little bit. But the talent is there, so always excited to do a game they're playing in, regardless of who they're playing. If they play each other, it's awesome. It's like Tom Brady said, we need the whole week to get ready for this game because you want to, you know, cover all your bases and make sure you're ready.
May I just interject here with a brief testimonial here, Mr. Richards? You asked, does he like to look at film? Phil looks at more film in a week than Leonard Maltin. This guy is sick. It's one of the strangest things I've ever seen.
No.
And I'm not talking about just our game that we're going to be broadcasting, you know, on a given week. And I'm not just talking about football season. I can call him up in the month of March and say, hey, I'm doing the East Regional over the Meadowlands. Why don't you bring, you know, your daughter Deidre over? You guys, I'll get you a couple of tickets. I'd like to, but I just got some film in from the Miami Dolphins. I want to take a look at, you know, some of their offensive line play. In March, my invitation to take him to Augusta this year. Can't do it. Want to look at the 49ers on film. It's a 365-day deal for him, and he loves it.
Well, Phil, I it's embarrassing, and I'll just say it comes down to this. The moral of that story is I'll do anything to stay away from Jim Nance.
Yeah.
That's the moral of that story.
If I could, just a quick follow-up for Coach Cowher and for Phil. What might tip that? I mean, they aren't on the field at the same time, obviously. It's not a matchup. But what might tip that, whether it's the individual skills of Brady and Manning or pass rush, running game, protection? Do you see any key areas
in this game?
Yes.
Well, I mean, I think, like I said, I think there's, I mean, if the quarterback is, the comparison of the quarterbacks is a very easy one to go to, and a lot of people will do it. But I think you look at these two defenses, I think the key is to see what their approaches are going to be to stopping, you know, the other team's offense, because you got two of the most potent offenses in the National Football League, and you got defenses that are going to have to match that and be able to slow that down to some extent. And, you know, what is Indianapolis going to do with Bob Sanders? I mean, we all know how well he is around the line of scrimmage, but do you risk, you know, leaving single coverage on the outside and then you take away from the line of scrimmage? And, you know, you look at the outside linebackers of New England and, you know, how are they going to match up with Dallas Clark? And, you know, the same thing with the secondary. And, you know, are they going to risk, you know, leaving Hobbs out there 1-on-1 with Harrison or Wayne? So I think a lot of matchups in this game, which is going to be very intriguing to me, is going to be to see how these defenses combat some of these explosive offenses that they're going against.
Phil, let me just say this too about the game. You know, so many good things components to watch, and what could be the difference? And I never say this because I'm just not one that's all about the quarterback. I don't fall into that trap, but it could come down to which quarterback is just really grooving it that day. It could be that close. And you know what I mean by grooving? I mean just throwing it into windows that are not big. You know, the velocity, the accuracy, it's all there. And you say, well, don't they always have it? Of course not. Quarterbacks are a lot like pitchers. They have days when it's not quite, you know, it's just they can't get that rhythm or not just missing a little bit. You know, Peyton Manning down in Carolina last week, physically, you know, it took him a while. He had some throws that you don't see him make. He never makes those. And, you know, look at Tom Brady last year in the playoffs at times. In Indianapolis, he didn't throw the ball physically as well as he's capable of doing it. So, you know, I don't know. There's so many great components. It might just come down to which one of them is just physically having that great up day. That could be the difference in the game.
Thanks much.
Thank you. Our next question will come from Brian Costello with the New York Post. Please go ahead.
My question is for Phil and Jim. You know, I think you guys might have perspective on this from your travels and people approaching you in airports and stuff, but with the Patriots and the success that they've had, combined with some of these incidents like Spygate or the perception that they robbed the score, has this become a team that people love to hate? Do you get a sense that people are rooting against them when you go from place to place? I mean, obviously outside Boston.
Brian, I'll say this. And we see a lot of people. We talk to a lot of people. I don't ever get that sense. Maybe a person here and there. But generally, here's what I get. Nobody will beat the Patriots. Isn't it unbelievable? And that's all they can talk about is Tom Brady, the stuff that they're doing, the touchdown passes, and the Spygate. And all. I haven't heard it. I truly have not heard that maybe once or twice. I don't know. But what I usually hear is what I said. It's the greatness of what they're playing with, and I don't even hear much about the Colts. It's all about the New England Patriots.
I don't hear anything that strong. I think hate's too strong. But if there's a good guy, bad guy set up in this game, you know, I really think the bad guy would be New England. What with this whole "are they running up the score" chatter that's everywhere out there today. It's interesting to see that transformation, though, because when they won their first Super Bowl off that 2001 season, they were the Patriots. You know, they were like America's team. It was fitting that they won. They introduced their team.
I wouldn't say it was fitting that they won.
Sorry about that. The AFC title game. I'm playing off the Patriots here.
I know.
Yeah, we were there with you, Bill. You know, but they've gone from that team that was very likable, the underdog that was a decisive underdog, in fact, in that Super Bowl, to where now there's an awe factor. You know, I know that like Coach Cowher, all of them are programmed this way not to look ahead. But, you know, sometimes I can't help myself as a fan. And if you start thinking about New England, if it gets past this game, you know, there's a couple of spots there that's, you know, they're going to be tested. They got Pittsburgh, for example, in Foxborough in December. But now would be the proper time to start thinking about this team in some sort of context, that they have a chance to be the ultimate super team. I mean, they haven't even had a game closer than 17 points, and they've already finished half of their regular season. They finished.